Hi, I'm Aaron Douglas. You most likely know me from Battlestar Galactica, where I played Chief Tyrell. And I've been on a bunch of other things. I was Turtle in the Flash and Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. I was Gordon Rimmer. That's a fan favorite. Geordie Chin from Ubisoft's Watch Dogs. Watch for more of that. And now I'm writing comic books for Aftershock Comics. And you are listening to Kneel Before Pod.
Kneel Before Blog presents Kneel Before Pod.
Predator. Okay, I just wanted to start that one as starkly as the film itself does. It's me, Angus. We're back for another Alien Day special. And yeah, we've covered so many of the Alien movies already. And this time, we're rolling round to 1987's Predator, directed by John McTiernan. The Kneel Before Pod squad has been called in for another mission. And joining me this time is the sexual Tyrannosaurus, Craig.
Angus, you son of a bitch.
I was hoping for that.
I've been thinking about doing that for an entire year.
Yeah, it's funny to be here talking about another good movie for a change, seeing as we've had our ups and downs on Alien Day special.
Yeah, how is this the first Arnie movie that's ever been covered on the podcast as well?
At all?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think we've done one before that.
This is an honour.
260 somewhat episodes and we're finally doing Arnie.
Wow, obviously we're all fans of Arnie, but you're such a big fan that I was sure we would have covered something before. We found some way to discuss it. Well, we touched on it, I suppose. Jingle All the Way, you've advocated for that in the past.
Oh no, then it is the second Arnie film, because yeah, there is an episode about Jingle All the Way. I'm wrong.
There we go.
First mainstream proper Arnie movie.
From sort of prime era.
Yeah, prime Arnie. So I'm kind of accurate. We'll give me that.
Yeah, so here we are, Predator. You must be excited as well to talk about a film that's fun to watch.
Yeah, it's good to be talking about good movies.
Shall we start with some spoiler-free thoughts, as is the tradition?
We should, yeah. That's what we usually do.
All right, let's hear it.
I really enjoyed this movie. It's been a few years since I watched it, actually. It's one that I just don't revisit all the time. And I think it's better for it, because every time I watch it, I feel like I'm reconnecting with it in some way, rather than just, I watch this all the time. It's really good, really well directed. It's really well written for what it is, as in it gives you everything you need. It's not going to be considered high drama or anything like that, but it's got more beneath the surface than its simplicity would suggest. Obviously, it introduces an iconic monster that still persists to this day and has yet to appear in, well, it has appeared in another good film. It's yet to appear in consistently good films, I suppose. And yeah, it's iconic. It's a classic of its day. Believe all the hype. It's that good.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's interesting because I feel a lot more connected to the Alien franchise, and that's probably because I host an annual podcast covering each of them, as we have been for the last however many years. But I feel like even before that era of my life, I was less plugged into Predator. I feel like I probably saw it slightly later on in life than I'd started watching the Alien movies. And so, yeah, it's the same. I don't revisit it all that often. So much of it feels very familiar. And when you watch, it's kind of like watching the greatest hits of something because you're so used to these lines and these images. It gives me real proper B-movie feels watching it because so much of it is quite simply done. A lot of in-camera tricks or quite straightforward guys in a jungle type stuff. And then there's the effects as well, which we'll come on and talk about. But yeah, it's a great introduction of a great cinematic monster.
Yeah, definitely.
And having said that about the visuals, there's also lots of interesting sounds. I'm sure you'll be choosing one of them to use as the spoiler alert.
Are you suggesting we should get to the spoiler?
I hope you have so many of these lined up. I'm kind of disappointed that one wasn't in an Arnie accent, though.
Yeah, I'm not going to do exclusively an Arnie accent.
Get to the chopper!
Okay. So now that we're in spoiler territory, I'm going to rattle off some plot basics for you. As we said, it's a pretty straightforward tale of a group of soldiers, mercenaries. They seem kind of mercenary-like, but they also seem a bit more organized. They're assigned to locate a Central American cabinet minister and eliminate the region's guerrillas. Major Alan Dutch Schaefer, I don't know if you ever get Alan Schaefer anywhere in the movie, but that's his full name, leads his hand-picked squad of elite commandos into the jungle. However, they're unaware that an unidentified interstellar spacecraft has landed near them. Now, an otherwise routine rescue mission turns into a bloodbath, as ritualistically mutilated bodies found at the scene give away only one thing. Someone, or perhaps something, is hunting them for sport. When Dutch attempts to confront the extraterrestrial tracker with his combat experience, he discovers their primitive weapons are no match for the creature's state-of-the-art weaponry. Does the outgunned and outmatched squad stand a chance against the ultimate hunter, the Predator? So there you have it. Yeah, guys get dropped into a jungle. They think they're on a mission to do one thing, and everything goes badly, badly wrong once they encounter this alien presence.
Yeah, like I say, it's a simple plot. And it's interesting that the film starts out as not being about them hunting down this urban, not urban because they're in the jungle, but this myth almost, because it could almost have been, there's a myth about a monster picking people off in the rainforest in this fictional country. It's a Central American country, isn't it?
Yeah, and is it canonically Valverde? Is this the same country that Commando takes place in? And there's various other films that have used this as a setting.
But that could have been the premise, right? We've heard about this thing that's picking people off and we're sending you guys in to investigate it. But instead, it's just something else. And then they stumbled into this alien plot, which is why I think the film shouldn't really start with you seeing the Predator ship, because they could have play around more with that superstition and whatever as they're going.
I agree. It is an interesting intro, as I alluded to in my intro to this podcast. You just get Predator and then you see the spaceship peeling off and something being ejected down to the planet. So you're already kind of set up for something sci-fi is going on. And it's interesting that it's probably about 20 minutes or so into the film before you even get a hint of the Predator or any kind of POV from its perspective.
Yeah, it's a homage to The Thing, that opening shot as well. Where the same thing happens, and it shouldn't be in The Thing either.
Yeah, you kind of want to spin that mystery out for as long as possible.
Yeah, because you have one of the characters in here that is very superstitious and talking about monsters and whatever. So could have played more with that. Is it people that are well-trained doing this? Is it some kind of creature? Is it some kind of mythical creature? Or is it, as it turns out, an alien?
The female character they pick up along the way spins a bit more of the mythology, because I'm sure she mentions something about them coming when the weather's especially hot. So you do get a little bit of that, but it is interesting because it just kind of sprinkles it in, maybe enough to keep things interesting. But otherwise, it does seem like quite, as we've said, straightforward story of team of guys go up against an unkillable murdering machine.
Yeah, and it lets you enjoy the setup as well because it is so simple. Because you understand what's going on, it lets you build atmosphere and all that stuff. I think it's more of a, maybe a mood piece sounds a bit too wanky, but it is more of that than it is plot heavy.
Yeah, I quite like how long it takes to build into it and get you familiar with the team, because they're just so over the top and so roided out and macho, and it's almost parody. There must be an element of that in what they were presenting here, but it's funny to watch it in sort of 21st century mode, looking back to 1987 and just thinking, look at all of the over-the-top muscles, the over-the-top guns, the explosions. This is kind of a celebration of all of that stuff.
I actually think it is parodying it. When I was preparing for this, I was looking around just to see what kind of reactions it got from people, and people are talking about, yeah, it's glorifying the masculinity, you've got the sexual Tyrannosaurus line, you've got the guy telling dirty jokes. And I actually think it's punishing that sort of mindset, because if you think about it, every time someone is macho or violent, they're actually killed. It leads them to their death, they're punished for it, whereas Arnie doesn't win until he uses his brain. So it's the idea that muscles aren't going to get you out of everything, and we're approaching the late 80s, so it's maybe John McTiernan or whoever sees the sunset on that kind of testosterone-fueled movie action hero thing and is lampooning it in some way. He did make Last Action Hero, so he knows his way around genre tropes, I would think. So I think he's deploying that in here somewhere, because there's just so many instances of the tough guys get punished for being tough guys.
Yeah, it's true. It's been said many times, Alien is that kind of haunted house in space. This is a bit like a sort of slasher, where in traditional slasher movies you get punished for doing drugs or being promiscuous, and that's what leads to your death. You're right, in this, the guys are kind of over-the-top caricatures of macho men, and when they're behaving badly, that's when they get picked off.
Yeah, even Carl Weathers is a more modern masculine, as in he's arrogant and corporate. There's that, well, say more modern. But yeah, you have the ridiculous guy in a suit thing, and he acts all macho because he's in charge and makes more money than you, that kind of thing. So he's kind of lording it over Dutch. Yeah, I'm in charge. I sent you in here. Deal with it.
Yeah, he's kind of cynical. And at that point, Dutch is probably a bit kind of naive to think that everything's black and white, really. And Dylan is a bit more follow the money.
Yeah, and there's a degree of Arnie wants it to be simple when it just isn't. It's almost shades of the Vietnam thing. People just want to fight, or people just want to do their jobs, but turns out there's more beneath the surface that you need to think about. And I get the sense that Dutch doesn't really want to think in those terms. And he doesn't like being used either, the whole expendable assets thing. We needed an elite team to do this job to prevent a war, and you did it, and we didn't tell you the whole truth because otherwise you wouldn't have done it. It's not far after Vietnam, so it is in that kind of post-Vietnam America poking its nose into things where it doesn't belong, maybe.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that this is the ultimate macho 80s action, or is that because, as you said, it's like a parody, it's kind of cutting that off at the knees? Does it stand up there as that, or can it be both?
Well, I definitely think it works on that level. It's, yeah, the macho action guys showing off their muscles and saying all tough guy one-liners and whatever. And I actually didn't think about the meaning of that until this viewing, really. So my analytical brain has never been on when I've been watching this before, apparently. But you can certainly watch that and you can laugh at the dirty jokes, or you can laugh at the stupid one-liners. And there's definitely a couple of sequences where they've just put one-liners in because, well, Arnie says one-liners. That's weird because that attack on the camp scene, and I was reading into it, that was actually done by the second unit director, because they were over time and over budget or something like that. So the second unit director was made to do this to get the studio interested in the film again. And you can see the difference between that sequence and any other sequence in the film, because it's just chaos. You have no idea where anybody is, where anything is, or what's really going on. Whereas if you look at anything that McTiernan directs, you get a real sense of where everybody is, what they're doing, what their surroundings are. So it's two different people effectively doing that. But that sequence feels like what you would expect from a film of this ilk. And the rest of it isn't.
It is interesting. It does kind of stand out, and it's so bombastic and so over the top.
Yeah.
And so boneheaded as well, including the plan that they execute. Arnie kind of sneaks off and then drops a truck into the camp. I'm sure these guys have far stealthier and more tactical ways of dealing with this situation, but instead they just blow the hell out of everything.
Yeah, well, before it's let's be careful with our recon and whatever. Now it's just, right, we're just going to go in guns blazing.
Yeah. So Arnie as a character, or Dutch as a character, Arnold Schwarzenegger, what do you think of him as the leading man in this?
I think they're very careful not to tar him with the same brush as the other characters, as in he doesn't have any of those obnoxious traits. He's very flat, actually, but a lot of Arnie characters are very flat, but you know what sort of a guy he is. Mm-hmm. He's no nonsense. He does his job. He takes it very seriously. The unit respect him because he's been in charge of them for so long, kept them alive this long, I guess. So he's straight to the point. He doesn't like to be messed with, and Arnie commands a lead very well. He always has, and that's why he's in the position he's in. So, like you said earlier, that's just peak Arnie, and he does it very well.
Yeah, and for him to be so pragmatic like that, I think works out well, or goes to show how he manages to survive to the end, because, as you say, the rest are all joking or showing off or showing these character traits that wind up getting them killed. But it does come down to, admittedly, his brawn, but quite a lot of his brain as well at the end.
Well, yeah, he needs his muscles to implement his plans because it involves heavy stuff. And then the idea of the concealed by mud thing, the mud blocking the predator's tracking, he's putting away his muscles. They're not on display anymore.
Well, yeah, to an extent, there's only so much you can hide that physique.
Yeah, but the idea he's blending into the backdrop rather than standing out in the way that he normally would.
It's true. You start off, he's got his kind of standard uniform as a costume, and then begins shedding more and more of it as the rest of them do when they're setting up their traps and things. More and more layers come off and more muscles come out.
Yeah. Again, I think it's part of that taking a jab at the toxic masculinity action movies, the idea that, well, in the climax, we're going to cover Arnie in mud so that it's less obvious how muscular he is.
Yeah, and it is interesting to think that maybe the first few times I saw this, I did treat it as just a guns explosion gore fest, and that was what I was enjoying about it, because that was of the age where that sort of thing appealed to me. I do find it interesting that, as you say, on this viewing, you kind of take something else from it as well and reflect upon the ways it's sort of flipping those expectations on their head.
Well, the beauty of it is it doesn't condemn its audience for enjoying that sort of stuff, because that stuff is there. It's just that extra layer is there to be found if you want to look for it.
Mm-hmm. Almost, but probably not quite living up to Arnie on the buff scale is Carl Weathers.
He is pretty huge in this film, though.
He is indeed, yes. He shows himself off quite well in this movie.
He's probably bigger than I've seen him in anything, really.
Yeah, he's playing a kind of interesting... It made me think, because he's got that kind of corporate side to him, and we're thinking about this in a bit of a reflection of Alien and Aliens context. You've got the corporate character Burke in Aliens. Hmm. And there's a bit of intrigue as to why Carl Weathers has roped this squad in to do his bidding. Gives them a story about what the mission is, and then it all kind of unravels a bit. He's been stringing them along. You're not really sure if you can trust him. And you get a bit of this feeling of, how much does he know? What's he really taking them out there for?
Yeah, and he's introduced wearing a tie. You can tell through wardrobe the fact that he represents this sort of corporate enemy in a way. And
yeah,
the fact that he opts to go with them is in hindsight a little bit suspicious as well.
Yeah, I just get the feeling, maybe again in response to Aliens, that it seems as if he knows more. He's being sent out to try and figure out more about this potential asset, that they maybe know a bit more about the fact that there's a predator on the loose. What could this mean? Who could this be useful to?
Maybe. It just more seems that it's about the averting a war thing, because they talk about the Russians being there or whatever. It seems that he's just more interested in making sure that he has eyes on the job getting done.
Right, yeah. Just the CIA meddling in foreign affairs.
Yeah. So he's obviously gotten a bit of a larger sense of the bigger picture in his time behind a desk, pushing too many pencils.
Yeah. And did you notice that the desk he's sitting at the very beginning, the ceiling fan above it is so low?
Yeah.
I don't know why that was like that, but I thought as soon as you stand up, you're going to hit your head on that.
Or if you yawn and stretch or something.
Yeah.
Although it's a bit of a ramshackle facility they're in at the beginning, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Again, it's that Vietnam imagery of the helicopters landing in a jungle and tents and stuff.
Yeah, very much so. The helicopter scene as they're navigating through this canyon into the jungle definitely has all that Vietnam imagery.
It just reminded me of Apocalypse Now, which is maybe where my benchmark for Vietnam comes from.
Yeah, well, it was a very cinematic war and has been represented on film many times, so it's an interesting one to think of and have these images sparked off whenever you see them.
Yeah, and it's interesting that movies were still being made about the fallout from it as late as this.
Yeah, it definitely had that kind of long-lasting effect. In terms of the rest, the supporting cast, the squad, are there any standouts for you? I always look out for how much am I connecting with any of them? How much do any of them stand out? Or are they all just kind of interchangeable grunts? I think there are a few interesting characters amongst them. You don't really learn their names until they're in jeopardy. I wonder if that's a tactic as well, or is it just the way that the story's told? You don't need to be introduced to them all by name and by rank or character or anything to begin with. You just slowly get to learn a bit more about them as we're following them into the jungle.
It reminded me a bit of how Aliens introduced the group of Marines, where they're on the, in that case, the dropship, and they're just given their personalities.
Yeah.
Now it's your turn to show personality. Now it's your turn. And then you get a sense of whether they're going to annoy you or not, I suppose. So, yeah, and this you get the introduction to their baseline trait. I'm the guy with the stupid lines. I'm the guy that tells stupid jokes or things like that. But I don't feel like I connected massively with them in an individual level. But I think they were defined enough so that I knew who they all were.
Yeah. I think most of them stand out enough, probably to begin with. Blaine, played by Jesse the Body Ventura, he's the most bombastic to begin with, so it stands out, obviously. Billy, played by Sonny Landham as the tracker, he also has a very defined role and he leads a lot of the way. He's taking point a lot of the time and seems to have a feel for something strange is out there watching them, so he's got a lot to do there. So that's a really easy connection to make with him, and he's very easy to identify from that point of view.
The information he had was bordering on supernatural, wasn't it? I saw these guys coming into the woods, and then I saw these other people following them, and then I saw this happen. What? How wide is your field of vision?
I do think that maybe, well, he's kind of coded as Native American,
yeah,
as a Native American tracker, and I wonder if that is a bit cliched.
On the nose anyway, yeah.
Yeah, to just ascribe all of these almost supernatural powers and say, well, of course he can do this, he's this kind of guy.
And Shane Black sitting there saying, one day I'm going to make a terrible one of these.
Yeah, I included Shane Black, but I think that his character was maybe one of the lesser couple of guys that kind of blend together for me, maybe because they stand out less as a Jesse the Body Ventura does.
Yeah, he's the one that's telling all the dirty jokes.
Someone I really like seeing in this, and I feel stands out to me, is Bill Duke as, yeah, Mac. A really interesting, really intense character, but I think he's got a face that matches it as well. I find it really magnetic almost. Whenever he's on screen, he's got such an interesting face.
And his affectation is he's always shaving.
Yeah, but I just find that when the camera lingers on him, I can't take my eyes off the screen just because of how fascinating he is to watch. And there's a lot of the time where he's very still, but yeah, I just find that a really interesting performance.
Yeah, it's such a marvel of characterization. They're not deep characters by any means. Even Arnie isn't. But these supporting characters who effectively do almost nothing in some cases, you still are aware of who they are. So when they die, you feel that gap because effort was put into making them part of the tapestry of the film.
Yeah, I agree. I think that maybe Billy gets the shortest shrift. You get to see him preparing for a last stand, and then you hear him off screen screaming, presumably because he's encountered the predator, and then gets a pretty horrific, presumably he's already dead by the time the predator is claiming his spine and skull as a trophy. But that seems like a pretty grim way for you to end up.
That's what you get for telling dirty jokes in this horror movie.
Well, yeah, he did laugh at them as well, I suppose. He sort of pauses and then gets the joke and laughs away. And we've got the token woman in an action movie as well. Elpidia Carrillo plays Anna. What do you think of her?
She's probably the least distinct of them. It's weird because they could have used her much more for local knowledge. I love that Arnie's just not interested in looking after Carl Weathers. It's like, we should bring her with us. And it's like, fine, she's your baggage, not my problem. I think she has some good scenes with Arnie and stuff when she's talking about the terror that she feels. And I like that she keeps trying to escape. She's not just simply a arm candy hostage type. She's very capable.
Yeah, I mean, she kind of shows Dylan up a bit. Yeah, she manages to get one over on him a few times. She almost escapes, and it does make him seem a bit bungling. Despite how buff he is and how capable he seems at the beginning, he gets the wool pulled over his eyes a couple of times.
He's rusty. He's been behind a desk too long.
Yeah, he's been pushing too many pencils. Yeah, so in opposition to our human characters, we've got the Predator. And it's interesting from the point of view of this podcast and how many Alien and then eventually Alien versus Predator and Aliens versus Predator Requiems we've covered. This isn't our first encounter with the Predator.
No, it's not.
Chronologically, it should be. So what are your thoughts on the Predator as it's presented in this movie?
I think it's an immediately iconic monster, and it does the Jaws thing of barely showing it, and the way it builds up over the course of it, you get little hints to it, and it keeps the plot moving as well, because you just keep getting little other tidbits of this mystery that is, what is this thing that's stalking them? So it's built up brilliantly, and it's a very formidable creature as well, because a lot of aliens, they are just animals in a way. The xenomorphs, they're animals, so they're acting on instinct, whereas this, there is definitely an intelligence at play.
Yeah, that is what is pretty interesting about this, when you know that it's stalking them, or you get that impression anyway. If you're watching this for the first time, you don't really know what's going on. You get this evidence, the bodies it's leaving behind, that sort of thing, the skinned corpses, grotesque. You know there's something else happening here. Eventually the human characters are working out that it's a hunter, it's seeking worthy prey, and that it's taking trophies. And it is also interesting that it relies on superior firepower and gadgets, and that even though it is physically imposing, it's that technology that it has over the characters as well. So it's got you on all sides.
Yeah, and you get a bit of personality too, even though it doesn't have any dialogue, but it has some of its own language dialogue, I guess. But you get a lot through visual storytelling, which again, I think is not quite a lost art, but certainly in action film, you don't get a lot of competently done visual storytelling, but you get a sense of its personality where it gets rid of all the tech because it wants to fight Arnie mano a mano. Mm-hmm. Because it enjoys that prospect, I guess. And things like, it didn't go for you because you don't have a weapon, no sport. There's a antagonistic relationship building, even though there's no dialogue exchange between the heroes and the villain.
Yeah, you're right. That kind of storytelling, it's good that it can convey all of these things. And that even though we do rely on speaking characters to move things along from time to time, most of the time you can understand what's happening just because of the actions of the antagonist.
Yeah. And there's other little bits as well. It's not routinely invincible until they manage to kill it. They manage to almost trap it and it forces a retreat. And again, it's the shooting at it, just using our muscles and our guns won't help here. We have to think. And as soon as they think, they get a small victory.
Yeah, and if it bleeds, we can kill it.
If it bleeds, we can kill it. Yeah, what a line.
What do you think of some of the effects that they were using to construct that whole Predator horror? There's the cloak, there's a fair amount of heat vision. The Predator uses voice mimicry, so you get this impression that it's reeling you in with familiar sounds and things. And it's got its own suit and armory as well. So what do you think? Is it effective? Some of the visuals might be a bit dated now, but do you think that this was a well-constructed presentation of the Predator?
My brain remembers the Predator vision being a lot clearer than it actually is.
Yeah.
But that might be because of AVP, because I think it was much more of a heads-up display in that movie than it is here, where it is just different coloured blobs on a screen. Again, John McTiernan, great at doing the visual storytelling. He'll cut back and forth between what the Predator is looking at so you know what it's looking at. Mm-hmm. So it gets around that limitation in a way. So that works well enough, I think. And I also like that the technology isn't perfect, so it can use the thermal vision to track things, but it's not infallible. Like when you cover yourself in mud, it can't track you at all because mm-hmm. the heat signature's blocked. The weapons are cool. The three dots, that's iconic. I'm going to use that word a lot on this podcast, I think. And the blade as well, the arm blade.
Yeah, I think that the heat vision, I'm the same as you. You kind of have a false memory of what it looks like, or maybe it is informed by other instances we've encountered of the Predator. I like it to begin with, and I think that it's interesting. And as you say, you cut back and forward, you get almost a replay of events that we've already seen. So you're being confirmed, right? This is what the Predator is seeing. I agree that it's interesting that it's not sharp and it's not perfect all the time. It can be beaten by tactics like using the cooling mud. I found watching it this time, though, that there was maybe a bit too much of it. I like it as an intro and you get to see through the Predator's eyes, but then I just found it just maybe a bit too much, and especially towards the end when it's kind of stalking Arnie, and as you say, it's not very clear, you can't really tell, and when it's looking at this, he's camouflaged, you just get a fully red screen almost, or a fully purple screen. I can understand the limitations and what they're going for there as well, but I think on this viewing, I felt like I had a bit too much of that.
I didn't really feel that. I think it was plenty, and it's kind of coloured by the fact that you already know what the Predator looks like and its deal, or at least it was for me, because you're building up anticipation for something I've already seen. It doesn't lose it, because within the context of the film, it's still very effective. It is a bit of a slow burn, then it shows you a lot towards the end, so maybe that's it. I like the first look at its hand, and you see the claw, and it's a scorpion on its wrist or something like that.
Yes, it picks up the scorpion. It is the same scorpion that Mac impales off of Dylan.
Yeah.
I was reflecting on the cloaking effect as well. I was trying to think how impressive this would have looked back in the day, because it's however many years old now. I don't want to just tear it down for this, but some of it does look a bit funny, especially the way that it's covering what you're supposed to believe to be the Predator's movements. And again, this might be informed by later movies that we've seen, or ways that you're expecting the creature to move. But just seeing it kind of jumping about a bit in the trees doesn't seem quite as menacing now, but maybe I'm just a bit jaded.
I like that the film answers whether the cloaking effect is intended just for the audience or not, because some of the characters can see the shimmer. So again, the technology isn't infallible. It's not that he's totally invisible. He's got an advantage, but if you're really looking, you can find it. And I think some shots challenge you to find it in the shot as well.
I agree. It is good that it's not just a complete invisibility cloak, and that even though this is a technologically superior opponent, there are ways to combat that. And then you do get some really cool shots, like at the end when Arnie's camouflaged with the mud and it comes crawling down the tree right next to him. I feel like that's the most effective use of it. Maybe it's more the wider shots when you see it jumping from tree to tree that aren't quite as effective for me.
That shot's at night, isn't it?
Yeah.
As well. So when it's dark, it's more effective that way. Most of the film's in daylight, which is really hard to create horror when it's broad daylight.
Yeah, it's a lot of crashing through the jungle. That gave me that B-movie feeling as well of, we've got a jungle set and we can just use however many different angles we need for different parts of this. The guys are at times not very tactically making their way through here.
No, but they're supposed to be stealthy and quiet, but yeah, they're making a lot of noise. Even Arnie orders them no noise a couple of times.
Yeah, they contradict that quite a lot.
Yeah, there's only so quiet that burly, muscly men can be with the giant guns.
Giant guns.
Including a minigun, which is normally mounted on a helicopter.
Right, you have to be super buff to be able to wield that. And as computer games have taught us, you have to walk very slowly if you're holding one.
Exactly.
So what do you think of the way that the Predator is ultimately defeated then? As we've said, it's technologically superior, it's massive, it's presumably very strong as well. We've seen it take out all of these buff commandos. What do you think of its ultimate end?
I love that. And I love that the sequence is mostly silent, apart from the music, because it's visually showing you what's happening. So again, it's great direction in terms of building up the traps that are being set and how they're used. And it's almost Home Alone-esque, isn't it? Where you see Arnie putting together these traps and then you see him use them sort of one by one. It's like, oh, so that's what he was going to do with that. You see him practicing with a bow and arrow, and then he's going to attach an explosive to an arrow and hoist the thing up, and he uses that to smash him in and stuff like that. It's masterful visual storytelling, and it's kind of counter to Arnie's shtick as well, because he is quiet for the entire sequence. He's relying on his physicality for the whole thing.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that the way that the movie kind of splits into thirds almost, in that you get the build up, the intro to all the characters, you don't really know what's going on, you get the ambush and then the squad getting picked off, and then the end is very dialogue free. It goes back to this sort of preparation sequence, as you've said, and it is that one-on-one Arnie preparing for the final showdown. Yeah, it's interesting to become very quiet again after being a very loud and explosive movie for a bit. It's an interesting dynamic.
It's almost Rambo-esque, as in First Blood.
Yeah.
I'm sure Arnie would hate that people make that comparison.
But yeah, it's interesting that when it comes down to it, even when the Predator is smart enough to realise that it's been lured into a trap, it's still undone by a log falling on it.
Can have all the technology in the world, but you can't defeat a falling heavy log.
And what do you think of the final reveal of its face and its mandibles and everything? The ultimate reveal. It's been stalking us. We can't see it for such a long time. You eventually get to see it in the suit. It sheds all its weapons and its armor, and then you get the money shot almost of the creature effect.
I don't think it disappoints, because it would have been so easy for that to look hokey. And I'm sure you've seen the videos of the first design for the creature, the weird lizard monster that had Jean-Claude Van Damme in the suit.
I don't think I have seen
that. Oh, wow. You should look that up. They scrapped that pretty early on, and Stan Winston came up with this design. And yeah, it looks great. It's a practical suit, obviously. Everything stands out. It's something you'll remember, isn't it? And
yeah,
there's a reason that the Predator has never went away since, even if they haven't made the best films featuring it. It's in everything. There's so many crossovers with Predator, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Yeah, well, it's such a distinctive design. And yeah, you're right. It kind of sticks with you. And clearly when something works, it works. And people want to see more of it. It's the same sort of thing you get with Giger and the Xenomorph. It's bold. It's like something you haven't seen before. And especially when it's in one of these movies where you don't get a good look at stuff. Obviously, you do get the shot where you get the full on, okay, this is exactly what it looks like right in the face. But you do just want to know more. And how does this work? What does it do? How does it move? It's kind of fascinating, I think.
Yeah, it's a great creature. And like I said, I like that it's not invincible. There's this sequence where it cries out in pain after stitching up its leg and all that stuff. It feels fully realized for that reason.
Yeah. I wonder about the laugh at the end, though, you know, when it's about to self-destruct. It's playing back a laugh from earlier in the film. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if it could laugh, what would it be laughing like?
Yeah, we've never heard a predator speak. Well, not using its own voice. There isn't the Predator where it speaks using something.
It's just interesting that it conveys kind of dark humor to Arnie at the point where it's about to blow him up, and it's sort of saying, signaling this with this recorded laugh that I have. Almost would have been better just to hold that in, and he's standing over it not knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah. But unfortunately, self-destruct countdowns are universal. You can always tell.
Yeah, he was able to just tell what those strange digital alarm clock looking timer was.
Also, it's a weird alien thing and it's beeping. I'm probably going to get away from it as quickly as I can.
Yeah. Obviously, we've already covered a couple of movies where xenomorphs and predators go up against each other. But talking kind of prime xeno, prime predator, if you're thinking about Alien, the movie, Predator, the movie, rather than Alien versus Predator. How do you think the two movie monsters stack up?
Not sure, because the thing about the xenomorph being an animal, you can't reason with it. And in theory, you could reason with a predator. But also, all the predators we've seen only want one thing. They only want to hunt. They only want a proper challenge. And this one clearly enjoys the challenge that Arnie presents to it. So I would say they're kind of on a par, to be honest. I think they're both great, but for different reasons.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're almost as fascinating as each other for the reasons you've described. One is an animal, and it's just a sort of relentless insectoid, nest-building, egg-laying monstrosity that can't really be understood. I suppose it's all instinctive. And as I say, it's just kind of relentlessly coming after you in massive numbers. At least that's what we see in Aliens. And the Predator, yeah, as you say, potentially could be reasoned with. It has built technology, has arrived on a ship, has come from somewhere else. So it's the kind of other end of the scale, equally horrifying. But I think what's fascinating about each of them is you see them and you want to know more about the lore and about what this means and where it comes from. And then, unfortunately, as we've discovered, peeling back, looking under the rock, you just get all the wrong answers, the things you didn't want to know. Or it's a really tough one, because the things that fascinate me about them are the questions that I'm left with are always better left unanswered than going in and actually creating prequels or team-ups or versus movies.
Well, we haven't really found out much more about the Predator than we find out in this film, actually, despite its many appearances. We've never seen the Predator homeworld. Is there office workers on the Predator homeworld? Plumbers?
Always had to wonder, are they all hunters, or are there school teachers and policemen?
They'd have to be, right? There's clear civilization behind the Predator, so there must be.
Yeah, and we see a bit of it in AVP, the organized ritual. They're interacting with Mayans or Aztecs or something.
But that's just an extension of this, really, isn't it? It's not fully realized culture or anything like that. We're not getting a sense of how the Predator species works. And then you get the sense of there's a rivalry that exists between classic Predator that looks like this and different predators that look different. You get that in Predators. And then there's whatever nonsense is in The Predator, which I've only seen once and don't remember that well. But we're still in the dark about a lot of how they work. So it seems like there's a reluctance to dive into that, whereas when you get to, say, Prometheus or Alien Covenant, there's plenty of desire to answer all these questions that you never want answered. And I don't want the answers to what's the Predator homeworld like. I'm happy with it just being Predator in different era of human history for a while.
Yes, it's definitely funnier to just have a chat about than to actually ever see explored in any way.
Yeah.
Because nothing could ever be as satisfying, even if they do have predators that work in petrol stations or something. It's just not something I need to see.
Someone needs to fuel up those ships.
Well, yeah, I mean, someone does.
But yeah, I don't need to ever see that. It doesn't sound like they're heading down that route anytime soon. The next announced Predator project is going to be called Badlands, which suggests it might be a Western.
Okay, yeah.
Based on the title. But yeah, give us Predator in feudal Japan or whenever, rather than some kind of deep exploration of the Predator homeworld.
I'm on board. So out of the two monsters that we've covered in this series of podcasts, do you have a favorite?
No, I'd still think they're both great, but for different reasons, which is a really boring answer. However, if you want to go with AVP, it's the Predator that's the best because they win.
Well, yeah, I guess you're going to have to go on empirical evidence.
With human help, of course.
I side with the Xenomorph, I think. Not because, as you say, we've had the fight, we know who comes out on top. I'm more horrified and fascinated by the Xenomorph, even though they could well be equals. There's all sorts of great traits for each of them, whichever side of the argument you're on.
What they should have done to bring Dutch back was put him in an Alien film rather than a Predator film. Have him take on both beasts and see how he handles both.
Well, see, that's the thing. How would you even go one-on-one with an alien?
I don't know.
Maybe the fact that the Predator has reason and has the ability to think, right, I'm going to throw my weapons away, is a weakness. You might see it as noble, but the Xenomorph's not going to stop. It's going to come at you, and then even if you manage to punch a hole in it, you're going to get acid blood all over you.
Arnie would need to be at a distance with a high-powered weapon.
Yeah.
Interesting that they never brought Arnie back for any of the other Predator films so far.
Yeah, we'll come on to the sequels, etc. in a bit, and maybe we could talk about that then. But next up I have, you wanted to talk about the themes of the movie and the cultural context.
I think I got all that, really. The Vietnam thing was something I saw a lot when I was researching the film after watching it. And then just the sort of anti-macho side of it, that seems to be their theme, as in sending up that sort of thinking. It's in the past, it doesn't work.
Right. I wondered if you meant the current cultural context in terms of, we've talked a little bit about the quotable lines. I think about the movie as a meme almost, because it exists as this kind of memory. As you're watching it, it's like this greatest hits of the lines, of the images. There's the meme of Arnie and Carl Weathers arm wrestling. It lives on through all of these things and probably is enriched by all of those things as well. I think watching it now is such an interesting experience. We quite often come back to the context of what would this have been like in the cinema on day one or when it was first out. It's very difficult to put yourself there and try and imagine seeing this for the first time without any of the rest of this, or the years and years of people quoting "Get to the Chopper" or "I ain't got time to bleed" or that sort of stuff at you. It's not a keystone. It's not a massive film that I watch all the time. And yet when I do watch it, it feels so familiar because of all of this.
It's like that with a lot of classic films, maybe from this era or before as well. You may think about some of the classic lines in them. You think about Die Hard, for example. When you conjure that up in your head, you might think Yippee-ki-yay and maybe some of Hans Gruber's lines, but you watch the film and there's a whole film around it.
Yeah.
These 80s action movies and 90s action movies or whatever, they're often mocked for just being silly, but then you watch them and there are the silly scenes, but then there is stuff beneath the surface, or there's stuff surrounding all that stuff that you can really appreciate for being as clever as it is. And then it turning into a meme isn't because it's bad as well. It's turned into a meme because people love it and enjoy it, so it's affectionately regarded. We can laugh at Arnie's one-liners, but we love that he does them.
Yeah, I just think that the memes per minute in this, it's got to be up there. How many other films could bring a smile to your face as frequently, line by line? There's a low dialogue count in this anyway, because the last half hour or so is quite quiet or quite silent. Yeah, it's just how much of the script is quotable.
Yeah. When I was a teenager, I used to listen to a lot of prank calls with Arnie soundboards, and so many of the lines used in those come from this, so that doesn't help.
I just wonder, again, kind of going back to that, seeing it, you know, on day one, how much of that would have stood out then? I feel like it would have, but then is that just because we've had years and years of having it repeated back or played on soundboards? Or when he says get to the chopper in the film, it stands out because it's get to the chopper. But in context, I just don't feel like you would think watching that the first time, oh, people are going to be saying that forever.
Maybe it just is cumulative with all of other Arnie stuff. I don't know how people were reacting to Arnie live at the time in terms of laughing at his line delivery and stuff, but then he was known for his one-liners, and so much so that there would be a guy that he employed, I think, who would take a look at a script and just punch it up with some of his one-liners. And I know that he hired a dialogue coach to make them as punchy as possible, make that delivery as punchy as possible. So he knew it was a selling point.
He doesn't come back for any of the future Predator movies. Do you think at the time, having just watched this in the cinema, you'd be ready for Predator 2? Would you be looking forward to a long series of a Predator franchise?
At this point in history, maybe it wasn't just a given that everything was going to be franchised, was it?
Yeah.
You would go and see a film and just expect maybe that to be it.
Mm-hmm.
They do make a sequel. This was 87 and Predator 2 was what, 92?
90, I think.
Was it 90? It was sooner than that. Okay. So 2-3 years later, you get a sequel and it doesn't even have Arnie in it. It's nothing to do with the original film, really. I think he's mentioned. This is a lot like this thing in the jungle that someone reported about, but he's not in it. I'm guessing he was offered the sequel and said no.
Yeah, I suppose back then, as you say, we're looking at far fewer franchises or people getting kind of roped into deals where you're expecting to make a trilogy out of something. So when the sequel rolls around, then you might offer it to the original star, or they might not be interested, or you already know going in that you're thinking, right, well, we're going to scale this back. It's a sequel. We're going to just see how much we can do with this again. Yeah, I just think it's a very different kind of outlook or a very different approach to franchises to the way that we think about them nowadays.
Yeah, but I'm surprised that they haven't tried to bring Arnie back since.
Yeah, I mean, he's returned to Terminator, and has he been in more than one Expendables?
Yes, he was in 3 of them.
Yeah, so he's not averse to it, maybe at a different stage of his career.
Yeah. And they haven't been hitting Predator as hard as they have with even Alien. So you had Predator 1 and 2, and then if you count AVPs as being part of the Predator franchise, I suppose that answered that need for a while. But it wasn't until Predators that you got a proper third one, and that was way later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like the AVP era is almost like the sort of prequel era of Star Wars, where people have been waiting for it, talking about when are we going to see this again. And then it comes back and you think, oh, this isn't really what we wanted. And then maybe the later Predator movies are kind of the sequel era. And again, it might not be exactly what people want. I remember seeing Predators and looking forward to it because it was revisiting the iconic monster, being slightly let down.
I think I've only seen it once, but I remember really enjoying it.
We'll obviously cover these in years to come, so I don't want to give everything away. But yeah, it's just interesting that the appetite for them changes, and there always seems to be some rumor surfacing about what the next Alien movie is going to be, or TV show is going to be, or what the next Predator is going to be. And when it works and it's good and it's something like Prey, then that kind of gets your hopes up again, and you think, okay, maybe a Western would be good, maybe a Samurai Predator movie would be good. So you never know, there could be something on the horizon.
There could be, yeah, but it doesn't seem like they're as passionate about keeping this going as they are with other things.
Am I just backing the popular horse by saying that I like the Alien franchise more, or the Alien Xenomorph more? Do you think that Predator is kind of secondary to the Alien franchise and fan base?
It might be, although Predator has had more good films than the Alien franchise.
Yeah, well, as I say, we'll see, because we'll be covering them because of that crossover. And the crossovers that we've already covered, we know that they share a universe, and that for Alien Day, it's accurate to be able to now cover Predator movies.
Although next year we'll be back to an Alien movie, because Romulus is out this year.
Yeah, so we kind of dip into Predator and then back out for a bit. We do have more to come.
Yeah, crazy.
I'm not even that familiar with Predator 2.
Again, I think I've only seen it once.
Yeah, it's funny because it feels familiar. I don't think there'll be as many quotable lines, or there will be as many memorable parts of it.
No.
But just as a franchise, it feels like it's been there a long time, and it feels like I should be familiar with these things. But as I say, I've seen the Alien movies far more frequently than I've seen any of the Predators.
How familiar are you with all the comic book crossovers that Predator has been involved in, stuff like fighting Batman and so on?
Very unfamiliar. I'm familiar with the AVP game, played that. You could play as a alien or a predator or a colonial marine.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of AVP games, isn't there?
Yeah, but I always used to side with the alien on that as well, because I just used to like running up the walls and onto the ceiling and stuff. And the Marines couldn't do that, and the Predator couldn't do that.
I had one of them on the PC ages ago, and I never played the PS3 one that came out. I'm sure it was fine, but I never played it. But yeah, there was Batman versus Predator, which I've read, and it's actually really good. And there's a Wolverine one that I haven't read, but I heard a bit about it. Basically, in that one, Wolverine fights this one Predator spread apart by decades, but it's always the same one. But every time he fights it, he forgot that he fought it before. Because Wolverine has memory problems, and also it's just been decades.
Yeah, it's fought a lot of people.
Yeah, I don't know, I fight aliens all the time. You're no different. But they did all sorts of those, and I'm sure they've done RoboCop versus Predator and all this. Any of the big ticket stuff you can imagine is probably how to go at the Predator at some point.
And I imagine the Predator is always silent in these things.
Yeah.
So it's always just this menacing, brooding antagonist.
Yeah. There was a Predator game on the PS2 as well that I had, Concrete Jungle or something like that.
Don't remember that at all.
I didn't get very far, but I remember having it.
Yeah, so because I'm so unfamiliar with Predator 2, this one to me feels like it stands alone. Then there's the crossovers with Alien, and then the later Predator sequels came out after those, obviously. So I feel as if the crossover merges the universes, and I feel as if the Predator sequels post AVP Requiem all kind of string together into that series of films that we're covering in this series of podcasts, and that Predator itself and arguably Predator 2 kind of sit alone in their own little pocket off to the side.
Well, the universe connection is made in Predator 2 at the end when you see the inside of the Predator ship. There's a xenomorph skull in there.
Okay, so maybe it is just this one has its own little compartment.
Yeah, I wonder when that idea first materialized. Let's just shove this prop in here as an Easter egg or whatever. I don't know if Alien versus Predator was comics in the meantime or not.
I don't know. And if it was just something that somebody decided to do as a gag or an in-joke, and look what it spawned.
Yeah, I'm going to look up first AVP comic, because it started as a comic, didn't it?
I believe so. Yeah.
1989 to February 1990. Oh, okay. So they would have been making Predator 2 at that point as well, wouldn't they?
So maybe that's why they thought, right, well, as a nod to that, never thinking that it would go any further.
Yeah. And the first game wasn't until 1999.
Yes, that'll be the one.
So there we go. So the thought of merging them in comics and in film possibly happened around the same time.
And then you get to Pred Aliens and everything from there.
Yeah. It's all a very complicated thing. And it's dubious how canon, well, definitely in terms of the Alien movies, nobody considers AVP canon. So I imagine they're not canon to the Predator movies either.
I don't know. I've just explained my understanding of it and I'm sticking with it.
Well, there's nothing that actively contradicts it, I don't think. But at the same time, it is whatever.
All right. So now that we've mentioned all of these movies and the fact that we're covering them, I feel like it is upon us to update our rankings as we do whenever we celebrate Alien Day and cover another installment in this pseudo franchise.
Oh dear. I should have really thought about this considerably, but I didn't.
It's okay. I'm sure everyone who listens is going to go back and make sure that we're
consistent,
historically accurate.
Yeah, so ranking wise,
should start out easily enough, and then it maybe gets a bit more muddy, more difficult to see with your heat vision.
Yeah, well, I always say that Alien and Aliens occupy the joint first place, because it depends what mood I'm in, is what one of those I'll watch.
Yep.
So then Predator would come after that. So it would be a very close second in terms of one or both of those movies. And then you would have AVP1 in third. And then, I don't know, it's just interchangeable after that point.
I love that it just becomes a morass at the bottom of the rankings.
Yeah, I need to look at the list of what the rest of the films are even. Because I will put them in a ranking. It's cheap to just say, nah, I'm not going to finish the ranking properly. Okay, so after AVP1, I'd probably go Prometheus, because it looks better than the other ones. And then maybe Alien 3, then Covenant, followed by Resurrection, and then at the bottom, Requiem.
It's interesting. We're fairly aligned.
Are we aligned with our last yourself, so that's the question.
I don't know. I didn't do that much research. I just sort of sat down, took 5 minutes to think about it. And yes, as we restate every year, Alien and Aliens up at the top, depending on your mood. Do you want action? Do you want suspense? I've got them as 1A and 1B. Predator underneath. I very much enjoyed watching it this time. As I say, very quotable, very memeable. I'm far less familiar just in terms of number of times I've watched the movie. But yeah, how can you not have a smile on your face when you're watching some of this stuff? Then we get to that kind of muddier, more difficult to see with the heat vision part of the list. I've gone Prometheus. I was thinking about it and thinking, how much did I really enjoy it? But yeah, it does look better. And there are some cooler bits in it that I think just bump it up the list for me. Then AVP, I think we agreed there, that's kind of mid-tier. And when we covered that, we were saying it does what it says on the tin.
Oh, so Prometheus is better than AVP for you?
Yes, at this stage when I was trying to rank them.
I much more prefer AVP. I'd happily put that on and watch that right now.
Yeah, I've seen Prometheus a few times, maybe as many times as I've seen AVP. Yeah, AVP is dumb, but it's good because it knows it's dumb. Then I think we're agreed on Alien 3, Alien Covenant, Alien Resurrection, and then Aliens versus Predator Requiem. Don't think I need to say too much more about anything at the bottom of the list.
Once we get to the final Predator film, assuming there's nothing on the horizon, we should get someone to analyse the alterations in our rankings and play that back to us.
I'm not going to volunteer to do it at the moment, but I can see myself doing that for an ultimate special ranking. How consistent were we all the way through the years?
Depends when we started ranking as well, because I don't know if we did that every year until a certain point.
Well, we wouldn't have done it in the first year.
No.
Unless these films have been around for long enough that we knew about them. So maybe we started ranking around the time of Resurrection, because we would have had to have that debate about whether 3 or 4 was better or worse.
Yeah, someone should look back. But I'm not going to do that. Not at this point in time.
How many years have we been doing this now?
Well, the first Alien Day podcast was technically Aliens, because Alien was actually a Halloween special.
Okay.
That's a bit of trivia that might trip people up if there's ever a Neil Before Blog quiz that people have to answer.
So if Aliens was the first Alien Day celebration, we've done 8 Alien Days? Is that right?
This will be the 9th. No, this will be the 8th because this Alien was, yeah.
Because Predator is in that list.
Yes. We've covered 9 films, but one of them wasn't an Alien Day podcast.
Wasn't an Alien Day special. So in 2 years' time for the 10th anniversary of our Alien Day special, maybe we can have a full review of 10 years worth of rankings.
When we do Predator 2, unless there's another alien thing that sneaks out in the meantime.
Yeah, and that's just the excitement of not being able to predict what's coming up now because there's new content.
Yeah, Alien Romulus. It's out later this year. Nothing is known so far. There'll probably be a trailer by the time you're listening to this, now that I've said that.
Do you think a special Alien Day treat?
It could be, as opposed to this Alien Day treat that you're getting.
Yeah, but as we've just confirmed, it all ties together. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Shared universe. Okay, we're getting to that time where we talk about any other business or our final thoughts. We've covered a lot. I feel like we might just be reiterating some stuff here. But yeah, have you got any last parting thoughts to do with Predator?
Just that I really enjoyed revisiting this. It's refreshing to do an Alien Day podcast where I'm watching a film I actually enjoyed, because it has been, well, looking at the list, 3 years since we did a film that I enjoyed, because AVP was one I enjoyed. We have stints of, well, we had Aliens, and then we had 2 years of Drek, and then AVP, and then Requiem, which was dreadful, and then Prometheus and Covenant. So 3 years on the trot of not good films. So it was good to just get one that was, wow, this is a bona fide classic. Like I say, I don't revisit this very often, but every time I do, I have a blast with it. And maybe it should stay that way for me, as in it's something that I just watch every few years rather than once a year or every few weeks like some people do with stuff. But it's one of those films that I think I saw a lot of some parts of it, because it would be on ITV2 or something like that quite regularly. So you would catch not all of it.
Mm.
So it's one of those. And that's possibly why these things become so famous as well, because they're just on TV all the time. But no, loved it. Very well directed. Arnie at the top of his game. Carl Weathers, rest in peace, killing it as well. So all the ingredients come together.
I agree with you, and it's a good point as well about the TV repeats and things. I feel like this was definitely a playground movie. People would come into school the next day and be raving about having seen Predator on TV. So I agree, that definitely cements it there in your cultural imagination.
Something a bit taboo about watching it as a playground movie as well, because you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
Your parents don't know that you have your TV volume down just a little bit so you can just barely hear it.
I agree. It's infinitely memeable. It's B-movie awesomeness. Love the cast of muscle-bound meatheads. I like the fact that you can enjoy it for just being a daft monster movie. But as we've discussed, it's got those parody elements kind of sending up the whole genre and the idea of muscle-bound meatheads. The creature, instantly iconic, fascinating to look at, fascinating to think about, introduces all kinds of questions that, as we've said, we don't want answered. But I would happily discuss what college lecturers on the Predator homeworld are like, or fuel for so many discussions. I think that the visuals are interesting. I think, as I said, maybe got a bit too much of them, of the dated effects as they appear now. But yeah, it does something a bit different. Even the fact that they're a bit janky adds to the whole B-moviness of it. And of course, Arnie, the king of action, stands out, as you say, when he goes one-on-one with the Predator. And that yell he gives when he's trying to coax it over is just fantastic.
Yeah. Like I say, the ingredients add up to something great.
Indeed. And it was a great way to celebrate 426 Alien Day with you all this year. So thank you again for joining us.
Where the links will continue to get more tenuous as the years go on.
Unless more and more alien stuff comes out and then we kind of dip back into it. But I'm well on board the No, This All Counts as 426-able bandwagon.
It's when we run out of Alien and Predator content, that's when we struggle.
It'll be a dark day.
We start talking about, I don't know, alien games or something.
We'll do a full podcast on the re-rankings.
We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
That log bridge spike trap.
It's many years away. So yeah.
Well, that was our discussion about Predator for another Alien Day special. Thanks to Lego Lambs for the supplied music. If you like what you heard, please do hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you can rate, please do leave us a rating and a comment. But Craig, you're on the other side of the fence this time. What rating would you like?
I would like 5 stars, the number of stars in the Predator galaxy.
If only they had 5 dots on their targeting system.
Yeah, don't give us 3 though because of the targeting system. Give us more.
5, please, 5. If you want to discuss Predator, Alien, Xenomorphs, Yautjas, they're all the same thing. Aliens, Predators, Requiems, Dreams, or anything else with us, then you can get us on Facebook, Twitter/X, or Blue Sky. You can also leave a comment on neilbeforeblog.co.uk and join our community on Discord for more in-depth analysis of all your favourite nerdy things, interviews, a monthly news podcast. Join us next time on Neil Before Pod.